Hey, y'all, welcome to Geek Freaks. I am Frank, and today I'm joined by Jerry Perita. How you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Now, you are the writer and creator of Cicada Samurai, a brand new story, a new comic coming out. Can you tell us about this?
Yes. So Cicada Samurai is about a lone, immortal cicada. You know, the insect, little insect that pops out every 17 years, makes an unholy racket all throughout the Northeast, mostly. The millions of them pop out of the ground. He's the only one who lives forever, and he's imbued with these magical samurai fighting powers. And he's charged with protecting as many of them as possible so that they can, in real life, cicadas emerge. They live for like 2 weeks. They drop dead. And so his mission, his goal, his whole thing is to keep as many of them alive as possible so that there is another generation.
And so because he's immortal, he's kind of the protector every time there's a new generation that comes out.
Exactly. So in the story, he's been doing this for six generations. So he's been around for just over 100 years. Every other cicada dies before their 18th birthday, basically. The way I have it positioned and kind of how the story came about in my head is he's essentially, I have three kids, and my oldest is 12, and he's just starting to do things like, I live in Brooklyn, I'm in New York, and he's just starting to do things like, hey, Dad, do you mind if I ride my bike 3 miles over to my friend's house? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Very, very nerve wracking, And like, I am imbued with like, the need to keep him alive. That's like my number one job as a parent, And so in this story, this one immortal samurai, he's the only one who's been above ground. He's the only one who knows anything about life. Mm-hmm. And he has these millions of kids and he has to keep them safe. And he's going to fail. It's all my anxieties about being a parent of a kid getting older, going out in the world. Yeah. And so he's protecting these millions of kids and he's going to fail. He's going to fail spectacularly. He's going to try to warn them about the dangers in the world. Some of them are going to listen. He's going to be able to save a lot of them. Some of them are not going to make it. Some of them are not going to listen because they're kids, they're teenagers, and they're going to do what they want to do. I got 3 weeks above ground. I'm going to go live my life and I'm going to throw caution to the wind and stuff. So it's sort of about that. It's about like one person whose job it is to protect all these little people who are just constantly trying to get themselves killed.
And unlike your normal hero story, there's this expected loss that he has to kind of balance as well with like, what is a win at the end of the day,
Yeah, it's just him alone, mm-hmm. And there are millions of these kids and they're all over. And so, yes, exactly. He's not going to succeed. He's going to have to deal with losing some of the people in his charge, some of the kids in his charge. This is just a 10-page story. It's a sort of dip your toe in the water of the world, kind of learn a little bit of the backstory, see some action, meet the villain, the big bad for the series, who's a monstrous thing that I'll tell you about in a minute. Mm-hmm. But as we get deeper into the story later in the whole story, again, he's been around for over 100 years, six generations. He was originally one of these kids. So some of these kids running around are like his great, great, great grand nieces and nephews.
Oh, wow.
So they're kind of family. It's one of those vampire stories where like everyone dies around them, their family, they have to keep watching their loved ones perish. They live forever. It's mm-hmm. like that. He does that every 17 years, a new group of kids that he has grown to love and think of as his family. They all are all going to go do their thing, and die. And he's going to sit around and wait for 17 years to pick up the sword and protect another group.
Jerry, I'm going to be honest with you. When you hear about a cicada samurai, you don't think of how deep this is going to get, but it got deep quick.
I know. It's so funny. Like I'm in a lot of like writer workshops now and I have a bunch of friends who are writers and we bounce ideas a lot and we just talk about the process. And they're always like, you're supposed to start with your character, you build a world around them. But I did the whole thing backwards. I just started with like, I got obsessed with cicadas 2 years ago during there was a big Brood X emergence. And everyone was talking about it's gonna be the loudest it's ever been and all that. I started reading about them and there's all these like funny superstitions about them. Back when Europeans first got here, they didn't have them in Europe. So they got here and they thought they were locusts. They thought they were like a plague from the devil. These are people who came here because they weren't allowed to burn witches back home. So they're a superstitious bunch.
Right.
And these little monsters in droves of millions just crawl out of the ground all of a sudden, rip their way out of a shell. They're bright green with these big red eyes. And they were like, they're demons. Their eyes are red because they've been staring into the fires of hell. They were crazy, the stories they came up with. And so the whole thing started 2 years ago with me going, what if some of those stories were real? And then it just kind of evolved. And, you know, my kids got older and I was like, this character should be the one person in charge of protecting them all. It is kind of ludicrous. It sounds like a goofy thing, but you know, I wanted to put a lot of myself into it. And that's sort of where my head is at in life these days. And you know, there's that old adage, right? What you know. So that's what I know. And that's what's in the story.
Speaking of what you know, what was some of your early inspirations to write a comic book? Why did you want to go down this medium?
So I actually, I didn't grow up reading comics. I grew up watching a lot of TV. My thing as a kid was, you know, geeky TV shows. I was huge into The X-Files. I watched Star Trek The Next Generation with my mother. Yes. Like that was our shared geek thing in my family. I still watch those shows with my mother, you know, Picard and all the new ones and everything, Strange New Worlds. You know, so that the comics were never my thing until I worked on, I'm a TV producer. One of my multiple day jobs is I'm a reality TV producer, and I worked on, Comic Book Men. And so while we were working on that show, we were in, you know, Kevin Smith's shop in Jersey, the Secret Stash. And we would spend a lot of time in the shop, just kind of talking geeky stuff. And there would be a lot of downtime where I was like in a room full of comic books. And so the first comic book series I ever really read was The Walking Dead, which is like very late. You know what I mean? It's a very weird place for someone my age to start. I'm 43.
It's a good jumping off point because it's not like super combo or it's not real superhero-y. It's like, here's some good story. It's just told in this way.
Exactly. And so that's where I started reading. And then, I started reading from there. I went back and started reading Capes and Tights, and I read all the Batman stuff. And I went back in time and I read all the X-Men stories that became the movies, movies and TV. That's the medium I'm most comfortable. I understand it because I make it. That's what I do for a living. I worked my way backwards. I became fascinated with the comics that became all the movies and TV shows that I loved. And then from there, I branched out and just started reading other stuff. And now I really enjoy the kind of weird, out there, crazy stuff that all these really creative people on Kickstarter are doing, just because like, if you can get 50 people to agree that they want to see this idea that you have in your head, you can make it. You know, you don't have to pitch it. There's no gatekeeper. You don't have to pitch it to an editor. You don't have to pitch it to a publisher. Somebody at Image doesn't have to agree to like, you know, work with you on it. You can kind of do it on your own. And sometimes you get really like, you know, not great stuff. And sometimes you get really great stuff. And sometimes it's everything in between. But the creativity is like off the charts because there's no one telling anybody no.
Yeah, everyone could take their chances. Yeah.
Yeah. And you end up with things that on paper sound crazy. And then you read them and you're like, this is hilarious and great. Like, and the titles are all very funny because it's like, everyone's like learning to call the book what the book is. So like Cicada Samurai, right? Like, okay, it's a cicada, it's a samurai. I have some questions, but I kind of get it, right? One of my favorites is another Kickstarter going right now, Bigfoot Knows Karate.
Dan Price, classic.
Dan Price says what it is. Yep. There's another one I really like called Unicorn Vampire. And you're like, what's that about? It's a unicorn. That's a vampire hunter. You know, and you're like, what? If you went into one of the bigger indie publishers and you were like, I have this idea about a unicorn that murders vampires. Like,
yeah.
They'd go, I don't know. That sounds really bonkers. But if you can get 50 people on Kickstarter to say, yes, I want to see that. You're in. You can make your thing. You can do your thing that's in your head and make it. It's kind of awesome. So, you know, I'm kind of been enjoying that whole process. And that's how I'm funding this.
Now, as a producer, is there anything from that world that you're bringing into this?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because like storytelling across all these things I've learned is kind of the same. You know, like even I'm in a workshop that Scott Snyder runs, and he is always talking in the same terms that I learned storytelling when I was in, you know, school, when I was taking screenwriting classes, the three act structure, like storytelling, kind of Western story style storytelling is kind of, it is what it is, regardless of where, you know, what medium you're working in. So a lot of what I've learned, even reality TV, you're taking a lot of footage, you're turning it into a story in an edit bay, but that story still has a setup. It has some incident that starts the story. It has a finale, some kind of ending. There's an arc to it, you know? And so building all of that, it is very similar across all storytelling medium. What's nice about this is I am an awful artist. Mm-hmm. So there's like a forced collaboration here that's a little more in your face than in TV. You know, like you can write a story in TV and kind of not be involved in the production of it. You can't really do that in comics. You and the artist have to kind of work to get on the same page. And I've been very lucky. I've been so lucky with the artists who've agreed to have anything to do with me and this like goofy idea that I had. But that's something that's different from, you know, doing television, where it's like, television is also collaborative there. I work with editors and like, I don't know how to do that. That's a skill set I don't have. Mm-hmm. But here, like I have an idea of a thing and what it looks like in my head, and I have to rely on someone else to draw it. Yeah. And that's like a very challenging thing, and you have to trust that person, you know? And so that's actually very weird, but yeah, a lot of the storytelling aspects are transferable from, you know, you're writing a novel, you're writing a comic book, you're writing an episode of Law and Order. You know, there's sort of a this to it, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of working with somebody else and your artist, it's Mary Landrieu. How did you meet Mary for this project?
So Mary and everyone except for Walt, who is working on this project, I got lucky because I reached out to them on Instagram and they were into it.
Cool.
And that's it. Mary is a great artist. She lives in Edmonton. She's very young, makes me feel very old every time I talk to her. But she's incredibly talented. She loves drawing monsters. I was following her on Instagram. She had done her own Kickstarter that was very successful for a comic called Rich, which is actually, you can still pre-order. She hasn't shipped yet. So it looks good. She's very entrepreneurial. She's constantly starting new companies and like new businesses that are offshoots of her art, but she's incredibly talented. I just liked her work. And I had this idea. I had these character designs that someone else did. And I reached out to her and I just was like, here's my shot. I have this idea. It's goofy. It's like this. Initially she said, I can't, I have a lot going on. Right. And then I was just watching her online. A few weeks later, she was open to commissions and comic book work. I reached out again and she said, let's do it. So here we are.
Amazing art. It's so important that you guys take a look at this artwork. Cause I'm looking at right now, there's the Raven cover specifically that I'm just like, my God, that's gorgeous. That looks like a movie poster that I want to go watch. You know?
So, you know, what's funny is like that idea. So we had three or four ideas for covers. And one of them was the him kneeling, the character kneeling with the sword in the ground, very like classic samurai pose. I think that one was my idea. And then we had all these other ideas we wanted to make sure it was clear that, you know, he is a cicada. So that's something in the story. He is the insect. The insect that we know in our world as a cicada, that's what he is. He's this big. Mm-hmm. So I wanted something that made that clear, that he's this superhero character among the cicadas, but he's still that big. So all the dangerous things, all the kaiju kind of monsters that he's going to have to fight, to us, they're animals. It's a fox. Yeah. It's a badger.
Yeah,
it's a bird. And so in this case, it's a raven in this first story. It's a raven and it's this gigantic bloodthirsty. But I basically was like, look, everything in the story is like a monster based on some creature that lives in our world. Mm-hmm. Everything. So I said, you're going to really enjoy writing it. And then I've had so much fun with her just like writing things that are monstrous and savage. And then she sends it back to me like it's so close to what's in my head. And like I've adapted all the characters and what they look like to her vision of them. She drew them, you know, she created them for me and then sent them back to me. I had very few notes. But now when I think of the characters in my head, like I'm thinking about her versions of these characters now. So like, we're very much in sync now.
That's got to make it so much easier to work together.
Oh, it's great. And the monsters are very cool and she's amazing. And I'm very lucky to be working with her. I hope she does I hope we do this thing for five or six arcs and we do it forever.
I hope so. It's gorgeous artwork. So in designing these creatures, are you more focused on making sure they're recognizable as animals or are you letting this like kaiju idea kind of take over?
So I think it's animal. It's a case by case thing, you know, like for in this, I'll send you, I'm not sure if you have it in front of you. I don't think it's on the Kickstarter yet. Mm-hmm. I have the first two finished pages.
Okay.
And then I have pencils and some inks for the rest of the book. And the plan is to have the whole thing finished in 3 weeks. She's like intensely focused on this for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in the first couple of pages in the book, there's a rabbit. It just looks like a rabbit. There's when you first see the raven, it just kind of looks like a big raven, like a big bird. But the first time it takes flight to go attack something, its claws are just supernaturally enormous. You know, it's like little things like that where it's like hyper realistic, you know?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the main villain in the whole series is a cicada killing hornet, which is a real thing that you should look up and then live with the nightmares forever, because what it really does in real life is awful. It's it's amazing, but awful. That's more like a monster. That's like a monstrous, you know, insect looking thing, but it's going to have a different teeth thing. Some of the animals will look like the animal. Some will be hyper stylized. Yeah. And it's a comic book. We can go case by case.
It's almost want, like, you know, there's perspectives based off the emotion in the situation. You know, then you can really go crazy with it if you want.
Yeah, and that's kind of that poster. Well, I was like, that poster, I just was like, I want something where there's like a perspective. Maybe the animal he's fighting is there, and it's clear that he's enormous and our hero is this big. And so she sent that back to me, and I responded with the cover of the Meg. There's a poster for the Meg where it's like a woman in a bikini and like a inner tube in the water. And under the water, you can see the shark is like 50 times the size of her body, and it's coming up to kill her. And I sent that to her, and she was like, now I can't unsee that. That's what it looks like to me now. Yeah. But it's very much like a big movie poster. And she does the colors too. She does the pencils, ink, and colors. She's incredible. Yeah. And that poster, that cover is great.
You were talking about how you got the first two pages already coming my way, but you added two pages because, remarkably, this campaign has already gotten Project We Love stamp of approval from Kickstarter. What's the impact of that, and what does that mean for you?
So, I mean, it means I can make it longer, which is nice. I think that I wasn't expecting it to. This is my first Kickstarter. I worked on one before. I kind of knew what would make it successful, but I didn't think it would cross the finish line so quickly.
Right.
So I wanted to thank people, basically. I wanted to say, like, you know, I had finished writing the story. When I was writing it, it really wanted to be 10 pages long. And I had, for my budget and all those other reasons, the first time I'm doing it, page count, you'd have to be multiples of four, all those things. I kind of squeezed it into eight. And then as soon as this happened, you know, as soon as we crossed over, I was like, great, I can expand this little bit, this fighting bit. I can really get to know these other two characters for a moment because they're important. And like, I want people to make a connection with them so that later when I kill one of them, everyone's really sad, you know?
Yeah.
You know, good storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
there's that producer coming out.
That's it. You got to like build up a little bit, build a moment. So just let me do that. And that's great. And that's about, I'm so excited about it. I had a really long day on Sunday. So we were launched on a Thursday night that Sunday all day, you know, I'm like frantically, hysterically hitting refresh.
Yeah.
Nothing all day, long, you know, I was like, oh my God, everybody hates it. And I was like, I got pretty close pretty quickly to my goal. And then it just died, just stopped. Yeah. And it was like, yeah. And then at 11 p.m., it's Sunday, you know, people just are looking at their internet on Sunday. So at like 11 p.m., I had a flurry of five or six new supporters all in a row, very, very rapid fire. Yeah. And it put me over the goal right before midnight on Sunday night. On Monday morning, I woke up and Kickstarter had made me a Project We Love, which is so just cool. So great. My first time out, very excited. I'm like humbled by the whole process, by any of, and the fact that anybody wants a thing that I just fell out of my head, you know, it's just so like humbling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with you and the work Mary's doing as well, it's so eye catching and just such a neat idea. And again, we talked about how when you first think of Cicada Samurai, you're like, oh, okay, I think I'm down for this adventure. But then you're like, oh my God, this gets so deep and so heavy. So everybody's invested, and I love that. But you have also some really cool variant covers. Can you talk about a couple of those?
Absolutely. So one is by a friend of mine named Walt Flanagan. Mm-hmm. Walt is one of the stars of the Tell Him Steve Dave podcast. He's also kind of the creative shepherd of that whole project. So the Tell Him Steve Dave podcast has been going on for a while. It's sort of tangentially related to Kevin Smith and his whole orbit. These are, you know, friends of his from when he was a kid. And him, Brian Johnson, and Brian Quinn, who's from Impractical Jokers. So the three of them are the Tell Him Steve Dave podcast. Walt is also an artist. And Walt did, when Kevin Smith wrote a couple of Batman stories, Cacophony and Widening Gyre, Walt was the artist on both of those. And he's also the creator or co-creator of a couple of cult indie projects that, you know, Cryptozoic Man, War of the Undead with Blue Juice Comics, and there's another one The Knights of the Fifth Dimension, which Blue Juice Comics also is the publisher of. Mm-hmm. And Walt's great. Walt has a very kind of, he's very got like a kind of a, he's versatile. So Knights of the Fifth Dimension, for example, you know, it's about a story that requires two different art styles. So half of it looks like Jack Kirby, stuff he grew up loving, and half of it looks digitally created. And so I just asked him, I was like, look, I don't even have a full character render of this character yet. This is kind of what I have in my head. I would love to see your take on it. Just him in a battle. Walt's mind immediately goes to like classic monsters or super violent stuff. So his cover, you see that. So his cover is a large, gritty, angry samurai who has just murdered like and disemboweled a dozen enemies, and now he's standing in a puddle of their blood, basically in a field, still kind of full of rage, you know. And I was like, this is so, it's so different from what's in the book, from the style, from Mary's style. But the book that we're doing is still is going to be crazy violent. So the fact that Walt kind of based it more in like a, if it was that violent, he'd be covered in blood. It's really gritty. It's awesome. I'm so happy with that cover. It's actually been the most popular cover in the Kickstarter so far, Walt's cover.
Understandably,
he's great. He's great. I'm so happy he like was so was interested in doing it. The fourth cover, there are two by Mary and then one by Walt. The last cover is by Takashi Okazaki, who's the creator of Afro Samurai, which was this cult. I'm sure you know what it is, but
of course
it's a cult. Of course, the cult manga story that became this, you know, like incredible anime series. More recently, he did an issue of Star Wars Visions that was based on another anime he did that was also a Star Wars Vision story about a samurai Jedi story, which is a gorgeous book. And he's also, you know, the designer of like a dozen anime and video game characters and stuff like that. He's awesome. And so because of Afro Samurai, he's the first artist I reached out to. And again, just on Instagram, I just was like, hey, this is a long shot. You have no idea who I am. Why would you? We don't even speak the same language, but I have this goofy idea. And I thought I would ask you about it. And he wrote back almost immediately and he was into it. I didn't know cicadas are a big part of Japanese culture, like Japanese artwork. And it's a, I didn't know that they're native to there too. It's a big thing there. So he immediately sent back all this Japanese art with insects and, you know, other, like cicadas, but also other stuff, just the insects and like sort of insect looking characters are a very big part of Japanese art historically. So he did the initial character designs. He did sort of a very anime character looking version of these characters for me. I'll send those to you too. And then he sent me that one fully rendered out image of my guy in full battle armor, you know, with all four of his arms out with weapons and flying into battle. And so we had, you know, he sent it to me in black and white. I had a colorist. Once we knew our color palette, I had someone do it. His name is Slamet Mugiono. Slamet did the colors for me. It looks amazing. And I made that the cover. That's my Takashi cover.
Yeah. And I do want to touch on the coloring too, because there's a clear mood throughout from what we're seeing so far. Same colors and it's this vibe that's carrying through that, man, it just looks really good. Some depth in every color. There's no gradient, it's everything's in there, so it's really beautiful. It did a great job.
I got very lucky. Slamet's a great colorist. Mary does her own colors, but sort of the color scheme came from Mary, and everything has sort of followed that. You know, we've kind of stuck with that with the other variant covers too, but just the different, I love the different takes on it. I've actually I have a couple of more artists who are working. I want to fill the book out to 16 pages. So I'm not expanding the story anymore as of right now, but what I am doing is I'm going to have a lot of artists who I love do their own renditions of the character. And I'll have a whole series of pinups at the end, you know, that are like different other people's takes on the same character. Cause I love how it's weird. Like you say, Cicada Samurai, what comes to your mind, make that,
you know? Yeah. I'm right away wanted to like kind of work on a Power Rangers themed thing. Like, it just sounds like such a cool idea. It's a good, and your Instagram game is on point.
Thank you. That account hasn't been around for a long time, but I've been sharing it a little bit, and I try to respond to everybody, but a lot of people have pointed that out. Power Rangers. I didn't think of it at first. There's another show, Beetleborgs, which is in the Power Rangers universe.
So classic 90s.
Yes. And so right away people were like, is this like a reboot of Beetleborgs? It's like a continuation. Finally, like people were very excited about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't even know what it was. I had to look that one up. I watched Power Rangers as a kid, but I never watched Beetleborgs. So I had to go back and look at it and be like, oh yeah, I do kind of see that. I get it. The resemblance is there. So, you know, I didn't want to be correcting everybody the whole time, but like, again, my guys are this big. It's not fully grown adults. The whole, yeah. You know, but I love that it's recognizable to anybody as something that they love.
Yeah, you know? It's giving off like a more serious tone of the 90s Saturday morning action adventure shows that we'd be watching. And yeah, the fact that it's all this small is only by our perspective, but really in that world, when you're seeing like, again, that Raven, you're like, this is a kaiju that's going to be destroying an entire community. What will our character do? And it's right. We're here for it. Well, I want to make sure everybody heads out there again, Cicada Samurai, all the links in the description. We're also going to have that infamous Instagram on there too, so you guys can click around and follow up. And I appreciate your visit with me, Jerry. This has been an excellent chat.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Of course. All right, guys, again, links in the description. Click around, start following up on everything, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye.